I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is
Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
How are you doing? How you doing?
I'm okay. How
good,
are you?
Good, good. I am amazed at the prophetic nature of the television program SeaQuest DSV.
Yeah.
So many things
uh-huh.
are real now.
Yeah, and they're not, none of them are like the good things.
So I just thought we would start by talking about some things from SeaQuest that have become, in a very recent news, shockingly real.
Yeah.
For instance, after we recorded our previous episode and before we posted it, astronomers spotted an extrasolar comet on an approach to our solar system.
Okay, that's like an okay thing.
So yes, this object, which is now known as 3I/Atlas, was first spotted on the 1st of July, then identified as a comet, renamed to that current name, and it will make its closest approach to the sun, around 200 million miles, in late October.
Ooh.
It will make its closest approach to Earth of about 268 million kilometers on the 19th of December.
Okay.
However, it will buzz Mars pretty close.
Oh, like how close?
Only around 20 million kilometers.
Oh.
That's pretty close. That's
pretty close. So we're not going to get like a new alien front.
No. But if we're lucky, it will be close enough that it may be bright enough for any Mars landers to turn their cameras and get a look at it.
Ooh.
Which could be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that was just an incredible bit of coincidence.
Yeah.
Slightly more recently, on the 4th, the first known attack by a submersible drone in warfare occurred.
Oh.
Yeah. A submerged Ukrainian drone blew up a river crossing used by the Russian military in the ongoing Ukraine war. This river crossing was 3 logs laid across a stretch of river, so not the most difficult thing to destroy, but they did use a submersible drone to do it and made history.
Well, someone had to start somewhere, I guess.
These are the Shrike drones that have been used in all sorts of conditions, but yes, this is the first time one has been used as a submersible while performing an aggressive action. In this case, blowing up 3 logs that were being used as a river crossing.
Yeah.
So that made me look up, hey, what is the current state of a sea drone technology? And I found a company called Euronaval selling a drone they call SeaQuest USV.
Oh my god. Oh my god. That's like copyright infringement there.
Well, USV stands for Unmanned Surface Vessel.
Uh-huh.
This is a mid-sized sea drone that can carry any sort of payload, they say. Their ad copy mentions both cargo and munitions.
Okay.
They do have a submersible, but that is not called the SeaQuest. That is called the SeaGent.
SeaGent. It's very masculine. Very manly.
A little dapper, I suppose.
But dapper and refined. He's a gentleman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not just a man.
So if you want your own SeaQuest USV, you can get that in both small, medium, and large formats.
Of course. You need your sizes.
A SeaQuest to suit your own needs.
They're working on the jumbo size.
According to Naval Group, the SeaQuest S is the first tactical USV designed to be launched and recovered from existing surface combatants without the need for modification. The SeaQuest S has already been tested with a French Navy FREMM. There you go. We've got both alien bounty hunters ride as well as AI bridgers ride, I guess. A lot of vehicles are coming through, be they extrasolar comets or otherwise.
Somehow I did not think this was what we were talking about when it came to, like, recent events mirroring, considering the episode we just watched.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that episode is Alone. The title is Alone.
Okay.
There's a reason for that. We'll get to
There's a reason. I feel like they could have named it better, though.
This is written by Carlton Eastlake, who previously wrote Dead End, The Sincerest Form of Flattery. There you go. We just talked about it. And Sympathy for the Deep. Now, when Carlton Eastlake first showed up in the writer's rotation, I said, hey, this guy from here on out is going to write some of the best and some of the worst episodes of Sequest so far. This is not one of the best.
No. It's not.
This is not on the sincerest form of flattery end of that scale.
Yeah.
And it is directed by executive producer and showrunner David J. Burke. He's written for the show more often than he's directed, but he did direct The Good Death not too long ago.
This is a very Wendy-centered episode.
So we already know how you feel.
Well, the thing that's weird is, like, for it being Wendy-centered, I think I get angry the least at her in this episode.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. It's usually, my problems are normally when she's interacting with other people.
But in this, she's generally alone.
Alone.
She spends a lot of time solo on the run.
Or, like, one-on-one. And so, like, it's the only times I get annoyed with her is when she doesn't have to talk to other people.
So we begin with Dr. Wendy Smith on board the Maglev, clamping down on her Pelican case that she is bringing to SeaDeck for some reason.
Yes. And she, like, gets there and there's no one there except Darwin. And Darwin is like, Darwin just wanted to say hi. Darwin called you here because Darwin wanted to talk with you.
Yeah.
She's like, what?
She thought she was responding to some sort of urgent call, some sort of emergency. But no.
Darwin wants social time.
Darwin lonely. Darwin alone.
Darwin needs a friend. And you know what? You're the bottom of the list, but Darwin will take what Darwin can get.
That's not what's actually happening. What's actually happening is this is all a lure to get her to the surprise birthday party everyone planned for her. Yay!
And somehow, they worked magic in hiding many, many sea-themed piñatas in this open ceiling of the moon pool.
It's a big boat.
And a banner.
Everyone comes out with party hats. A lot of people are wearing their party hats in fun and unusual ways.
Ford has his, like, on his shoulder, kind of like Gundam or like Zaku style, like spikes.
Yeah, he's gonna shoulder tackle someone and impale them.
I expand on my cosplay and add some party hats to my shoulders?
Sure, yeah. Everyone comes out and they're saying, surprise! And you're worried about how they hid this in practical terms of the props.
Yes.
While Lucas is like, hey, can't you read our minds? How are you surprised?
Also this. He's like, I don't understand. She's like, well, I never read people's minds without their permission.
There you go.
Lies! Lies, Wendy! You're such a liar! You read people's mind without their permission all the fucking time!
My favorite part of this scene is when the captain stands up and says, I've been requested on behalf of the Sequest officers and her crew to make a very long speech so they have time to prepare the refreshments. And then they wheel out a big cake in the shape of a diagram of the human brain because she's psychic. Most important thing you need to know is she's psychic.
She has one hobby. It's like when someone says once that, like, I like pandas, and then they are only gifted pandas.
Then you're suddenly a panda collector. Yes. Just because you liked the book Eats, Shoots, and Leaves.
Yes. And she was like, you know, I am a psychic. And they're like, ah, yes.
Brain cake. Gotta get the brain cake.
This is your only thing. The only thing we know about you.
I appreciate that this is a gigantic sheet cake because there's a large crew aboard Sequest.
Not like some tiny little thing, not some layered thing. Not like five cupcakes. They're like, no, this is a giant ass cake that can definitely actually like feed 300 people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is a lot more people than they have in the room, but you know, it's a working ship. They're going to take shifts.
They're going to go around also hand out cake at stations, people on duty. They also have like another three that aren't fancy in the back for when people go to the mess hall later. They can still get birthday cake.
Yeah.
How many birthday cakes? They have cake daily. They have cake daily on this ship.
I think this might be an organization where they do the like one birthday party a month. It's like all the August people, it's your cake day.
Yeah.
But you know, she's special. She's Dr. Wendy Smith.
Yeah. I miss at my work. So pre-COVID, the like executive assistant person took it upon herself to like create the monthly celebration.
Ooh.
Because it wasn't just boring cake every time. She would go to the people whose birthday and be like, do you have a request for a dessert? And then would get several things. But she was also a baker. So when everyone was like, man, I want Magnolia Bakery's banana pudding, she figured out how to make the copycat recipe.
There you go.
Make it monthly and be like, okay, what do you guys want other than that? I'm going to make that anyways. But, like, what else?
It's good pudding.
And she would go to, like, the little bakeries. We never got, like, a jewel cake.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking loved it. Good. I miss her.
Now I just want to go to Magnolia.
Right?
Anyhow, in the scene, good things cannot last forever because suddenly, something strikes Dr. Wendy Smith like a wave and she collapses in her Obi-Wan Kenobi moment.
I was going to say she sounds kind of orgasmic.
Oh, wow.
It sounds less like pain and more like joy.
That's pretty messed up considering what she's reacting to.
I know. Her moans of pain.
Sure.
Just, they don't sound painful enough. I'm just going to say.
I mean, she is experiencing a number of little deaths. Sure, sure. So...
But yeah, so she collapses to the floor and she's like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling some type of like psychic field that's more powerful than anything I've ever felt before. And then we cut over to the security committee with Secretary General McGath, who's like meeting with people from Section 7.
A bunch of very powerful bigwigs, a lot of strutting and stomping as they get into this boardroom, this half-lit boardroom in New Cape Quest.
Yes.
And then General Reed is introduced. He stands up, he sneezes, and explodes.
Yes! His body just, like, balloons out.
It's like the first 3 seconds of Violet Beauregard's transformation.
Yes!
He doesn't actually explode. He just gets puffy and remains puffy for the rest of the scene.
Energy, like, blasts out of him.
Why does he inflate?
I don't know. And, like, later, you see him, and I'm like, okay, was that just supposed to make it look like his, I don't know, his shirt busted open or something? But I'm like, no, you guys, like, inflated his stomach. It's weird. I don't get it. But suddenly, there is a image of a man
floating
ceiling with energy around him.
Wreathed in energy, crackling energy all around him.
It's like, I am the avatar of your dreams. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't think this is the avatar that, like, what's his name, dreamt up. You're not blue enough.
Because this is an ocean show, and so everything goes back to James Cameron, of course.
Yeah, him. Yeah, that's what's his name.
That's, that guy.
That guy.
Big Jim, I call him. My best friend, Jim.
Yeah. He's got a thing for blue people, who are very large.
They could cradle me in their long, long arms.
Yes, and can just become one.
Yeah, with the ponytail.
With the ponytail.
You gotta get the ponytail. This flying avatar is giving a great big villainous monologue about how your sins shall be avenged, and his big departing line is, join me in hell, he screams.
Yes, with lots of maniacal laughing.
And
then the general dude gets an energy zap and, like, flies against the wall and drops.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The Avatar here is played by Raphael Sabarge, who went on to be a 5-episode crew member on Voyager.
Yes.
He starred in The Guardian for CBS. Mm-hmm. He played Jiminy Cricket in Once Upon a Time, mm-hmm. as well as the real world, you know, double, because that's how that show worked. Yeah.
I watched The Guardian. Did not watch Once Upon a Time.
Okay. He also voiced Karth Onassi, one of your party members, in Knights of the Old Republic.
Oh.
So I have to wonder, you know, maybe, depending on how they recorded that game, he might have shared a booth with the guy who played Lucas's dad when he was doing his lines for HK-47.
Oh.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. You don't... Mm-hmm. So then we go to the credits, and we come back,
mm-hmm.
and we are going to the UEO headquarters.
Yes.
We got Bridger, Ford, Wendy, and Lucas heading there, and Wendy is getting bad vibes off everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Every person she goes past casts her some sort of fearful glance, and the video stutters. Like, they are hanging up on freeze frames for all these people, because... As the receptionist of the Secretary General's office whispers to Lucas, everyone's afraid of psychics now.
Yeah, because she's a spire.
A spire. A name given to people who can spy. We call those spies. There's a word for that. A spire.
Spire.
It's like they wanted to go for Esper, but then did like an anagram, I guess. I don't like it. I don't like the term spire, and it comes up a lot.
I also hate it for the fact that, like, this is not a derogatory term that has been used throughout the season.
Which they're not afraid of doing. We have daggers.
Yes.
Yes.
But, like, remember when, like, they brought even, like, going back farther, right? Mm-hmm, to season one, and
the Alexandria episode.
Yeah. Like, people were freaked the fuck out, right?
But they never muttered, spires.
No, they're just like, oh, they can read your mind, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And then when Wendy comes on, like, people are, like, when they're getting their, like, evaluations,
mm-hmm.
People are also still, like, freaked out because, like, oh, she's gonna know, like, the inner workings of my soul. But, like, it's never, there's never any terms used.
Yeah.
In that way. So I'm like, is this a term that has suddenly happened because of some turn of events? Or is this like...
it's this Avatar guy, I guess.
Yes. Like, has it just happened?
It happened this week.
This week, we decided, you know what? It is time.
It is time for a slur. We need a slur now.
We are going to have a slur.
And because it's a new one, people don't accept it's a slur, and you can print it in the newspaper, as we're going to see soon.
Yes, we're allowed to use it, because we have not figured that out yet.
So, basically, the way this episode works is, yes, we have seen in previous episodes that people, individuals, may or may not react to the psychic awakening that has happened in the UEO future. With confusion and mistrust, but generally, you know, you get to know them, you have a good time, it all works out, peoples is peoples.
Yeah.
What this episode would have you believe is actually X-Men is happening, and we just haven't been talking about it.
Yep.
Just the X-Men is happening all along.
All along. All along, and there's nothing, you know, normal about this, I guess. This isn't an accepted thing. Forget everything we have told you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Let's pretend we are introducing the character right now.
Yes.
Because what has happened is over the past few days, there have been 5 more attacks by the Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
In this time of this dude in energy calling himself the Avatar, they've gotten as far as Googling that it's something Hindu, but we don't know what it means. So Lucas needs to come forward and be like, well, let me tell you.
It's a term for an incarnation of a god in human form, generally a destroyer, and like... Yeah, sure, sure. That's Lucas Walenchek's frame of reference for the term avatar. You know, Frankenstein? This is what he thinks of when he sees the word avatar.
And McGath's like, oh, okay. I don't know, maybe we could have looked it up 5 days ago or whatever, but...
And if you're going to go with the Hindu definition, maybe you could get... someone who is Hindu involved.
Maybe?
I don't know.
Maybe?
I don't know. It's,
maybe?
It seems like Lucas might have skimmed a Wikipedia page on the internet and not really got some of the flavors.
Maybe.
Yeah, the implications.
There's a chance of
connotations.
This, but we're just gonna roll with
sure,
it.
Sure, sure. X-Men is happening. Don't worry
yep.
about it.
McGath is like, let me fill you in. So there's been these attacks. The press is calling it psychic assassination.
Even though no one has died.
No one's died.
It's hard to have an assassination without a dead victim.
There are just five people in comas
yeah.
now. But it's an assassination, and that's what the press says. So obviously, this is really bad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Wendy's like, oh, hold up here. You guys think a psychic is killing people, though not actually killing people, they're just putting them in comas.
That's impossible.
That's impossible because, like, psychics feel too much empathy mm-hmm. towards people to be able to, like, hurt them.
Yeah, that's part of being a psychic is having this empathy. You could not act to harm.
Yeah, and McGath is like, well, you know, the X-Men is happening. Like, powers are growing. We don't even know where these powers come from. People are getting dangerous out there.
He mentions that this psychic awakening has begun in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So for, let's say, 22-ish years now,
mm-hmm.
now here we are at this point where suddenly this general fear and distrust of all psychics has been set ablaze by these Avatar attacks. And now we're going to send all psychics around the world into internment camps
yep.
and keep them drugged
yep.
continually. Not just the UEO. He mentioned specifically, even the non-member states, everyone's doing
it. So it's not that bad, guys. It's not like it's just an us thing. Like, everyone's doing it. It's fine.
Now, to be fair, Captain Nathan Hale Bridger says, what the fuck are you talking about? That's monstrous. You can't do that.
Yes. And also, you know, makes the parallel to, you know,
to Japanese internment in particular.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Not any other sort of camps. I mean, there's a lot of camps. You know what? None of them are good. There's not a good camp.
There's not a good one. There's no good ones.
The only good camp was in the classic film, The Parent Trap. That's the only good camp.
That's a good camp. Camp Nowhere is a good camp.
Is it? Some bad things happen there.
But they all find themselves and they grow as people and they learn to, like, have relationships with their family and their family understands who they are.
Okay.
And
I mean, it's a better camp than in Heavyweights. That's a bad
That's a bad camp. Camp Nowhere, they just want to express themselves. And
sure,
they don't have
sure.
enough adult supervision to do it. But they all learn valuable lessons.
I will say the Secretary General McGath needs a shave in this scene. He's looking ragged.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there is an exception to this global edict.
Yes.
Which is psychics who happen to have UEO security clearances. And obviously that includes Dr. Wendy Smith. She's not going to the camps.
Yeah.
And this is a point McGrath keeps underlining. Be like, I'm a good guy. This doesn't, like, I invited you to this meeting to find out about it so I could tell you you're the exception. You're one of the good ones.
You're fine. You're good. You can't be mad at me. This isn't, like, absolutely awful and against human rights.
And it seems like she's the only one. She's the only one we see. She's the only one that matters for the plot of the program.
Yeah, they're not like you and the other 10 or anything.
Yeah, it would be very easy to make it seem like, you know, that this also counts the negotiators from the Alexandria episode.
She could have psychic teamed up for this episode.
Yeah, but I think she might be the only psychic with a security clearance, and therefore it is an exception of one.
But he doesn't want to say that because he's in like, wow, we're really like...
Yeah, it sounds worse when I say it, actually. I get where you're coming from now that I say it out loud.
The more I talk, the worse this sounds.
I'm going to stop talking,
We're
going to talk
gonna
less.
We're still going to do it. I'm just not going to talk about it anymore so it doesn't seem bad. It's fine.
It's fine.
It's totally just kidnapping people and drugging them. That's like absolutely fine. The world's scared of you all anyways. So,
it's
like, obviously,
good that
this
we're
going to
keep you medicated in an internment camp. So this scene ends.
In Florida.
This scene, yep. Not necessarily.
You know there's going to be one in Florida.
We don't know where the camp is.
It's true, but they're in Florida.
Are they?
That's where the UU headquarters is.
You would think, but if you go back to the last episode where Lucas has his, find me help beacon, right? It's got latitude and longitude. If you follow those coordinates, it points to South Carolina?
They are not in South Carolina. Unless Florida is taking over South Carolina. Are there less states now? Was there a battle of Florida to the Carolinas? Yes. Because I say it's Florida because there's been, like, Florida license plates.
Yes, there are so many hints that New Cape Quest is obviously Florida.
There was that one other place they went in New Cape Quest that literally had a cutout of Florida on the wall.
Like, they drove from 20 minutes from Cape Quest to a Florida Native American reservation.
Yeah.
But they might be in South Carolina, according to this one screen.
I'm going with there was a battle. There was another civil war from Florida to the Carolinas. Sometime around, like, 2001 or something.
But yeah, just so you know this idea is not entirely on the up and up. The last shot of this scene is this really awkward close-up of Bridger just shaking his head no very gravely at his boss. It's so dumb. It's so dumb.
Judging you so hard right now. I hope you know you're doing the wrong. I'm using my psychic abilities that I kind of have, but we're not going to talk about because then you're going to throw me into the camp too.
Well, then it would be two exceptions. Three with O'Neill. Four with Darwin.
I was going to say, is Darwin affected by this?
Did they give Darwin clearance? Because he is an ensign against all logic.
Well, and do Bridger and O'Neill have enough psychic abilities? Like, is there, like, a cutoff of, like, you have to have this much ability? Or if you have less, you're fine. You're not considered a risk. And that will be, like, tier two of imprisoning everyone, is they'll come back.
You think maybe they just sort of, like, fudge the numbers on their brain physicals?
Yeah, like, I'm not that psychic.
I'm not that psychic.
I'm not. It's fine.
It's hard to judge exactly how psychic I am because my doctor is very psychic, so you can't trust those results. Yeah. Yeah.
But the only reason, really, that McGath is, like, leaving her out is because he's like, hey, you're the only person that has, like, sensed anything about this Avatar dude, so you have to help us.
She's apparently,
and basically, if you don't help us, we're going to throw you in the camp, too.
She's apparently their strongest, most powerful psychic, and therefore their number one chance at solving this mystery.
She is their only psychic. This is now confirmed. So she's like, fine, give me all the info you have. And he's like, here's a hard disk.
Here's a bunch of Game Boy Advance cartridges.
Over at a UEO safe house.
Decorated by grandma.
Absolutely.
It's all the same people. It's Bridger and Smith and Secretary General McGrath. They all went together.
Everyone went to the safe house. Wendy is like, you know, this is what we always worried about. Is since I was 8, we're like, people are going to hate us. They're going to hate us enough for this.
And we get the title drop. She quotes and she recites in its entirety, Alone, the poem by Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes.
And says that, this could have been written by a psychic when I think about it. And what bothers me, as a person who loves the poem Alone by Edgar Allan Poe, is that she pauses on the rhymes in the middle of lines and not at the end of the line.
Yeah.
Because that's part of what I love is how the rhyme scheme interacts with the stand. Grumpy.
I'm not surprised based on how she talks. She gets done talking about the poem. Bridger's like, look at our crew, everyone's alone.
We're a bunch of freaking weirdies.
Lucas is a weird knowledge freak, and like Darwin likes people, and Piccolo has gills. Like, we're all weird, too. We're not alone in the weirdness.
He decides to be less weird about Gelfs than the show in general by neglecting to mention Dagwood in this list of weirdies.
Yes.
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 We're just going to let that one go unspoken.
We're just not going to talk about that one.
Just going to leave that one alone.
But then, Wendy as she reaches for her shoe, gets a weird feeling, and her shoe goes flying through the air, levitating.
She has a flying boot because there is some sort of psychic surge that she's able to siphon off a little bit of the power of, and her teeny tiny bit of telekinesis that she has that we've not mentioned until this episode is enough to make her boot fly across the room.
Yes.
Ah.
Yes.
Because the Avatar has appeared. Ah!
And so they run downstairs and Gath is just frozen in place in terror with energy lights like pulsing off his face because the Avatar is there floating in the living room.
In his white suit billowing, his big, big 90s suit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Avatar dude is all like, you know, I told you not to try and stop me and I'm gonna basically kill you.
Brain blast Bridger, blows him out of the room.
Yes. And Wendy is like trying to like shield them all, but not doing well.
No.
And he, there's this great shot of where McGath like falls backwards.
Yeah.
And the camera follows him.
Yeah, it's reminiscent of the film Vertigo, the fall down the stairs. But my best guess is how it's done is they have McGath's actor on a plank that is mounted to the camera, and they lower and they just lever that whole thing down, and it looks really cool. It's a very elaborate way to show an old man falling down.
Yes, so he falls to the ground that way, and then the Avatar shoots energy at him, and it, like, is halfway up his body and, like, sends him rolling back.
Yeah,
till he slams his head in, like, the kitchen door.
Slides across the kitchen into the wall. Yeah, it's great. It's great. So, as Wendy has failed to protect her captain and her secretary general from psychic attack, all this commotion summons the local, you know, MPs, the people guarding this safe house.
Yes. Well, Bridger also, like, radios, like, forward in them to, like, call security.
But yes, it is local UEO security, not her friends on Sequest that see her kneeling over the unconscious body of the Secretary General.
Very much in a let-me-check-your-pulse way and make sure you're okay.
Or is it, it is I, the psychic assassin way. They don't know, but they have some assumptions.
And so she immediately takes off running, and so then they run after her. And she hops in a boat and speeds off as they shoot lasers at her from the dock.
Because this is still a naval show, after all. Her getaway car has to be a speedboat.
And so Bridger and Ford get down there and are like, stop it, stop it. And Bridger's like, what are you doing? And they're like, she attacked McGath. And he doesn't say, no, she didn't. I was there. I saw what happened.
There's a big flying man in a billowy white suit. He sounded like Carth Onassis.
She was trying to protect us. Like, no one argues this as the UEO security dude is like, I'm going to put a warrant out for her arrest. Like, say, no, stop, don't.
So we fade out to commercial and come back on an establishing shot of a gigantic auditorium.
Yes.
And inside this gigantic auditorium is a Professor Bingham, who is one by one placing printed handouts on every seat of this, like, 500-seat lecture hall.
You know what makes more sense? Put a little table by the door and put the handouts there with a sign that says, everyone take one.
Just put it on the syllabus. Put it on the internex. Come on, man.
Why are you guys still using paper for this?
So Professor Bingham here is played by Joe Seneca. He started his performing career as an R&B singer in the 40s and began acting on the stage in the 1970s. He had a featured role in the 1988 version of The Blob and starred in the film Crossroads slightly earlier, 1986.
Oh, so not like the Britney Spears Crossroads.
Not the Britney Spears Crossroads. No, no. No.
Wendy comes in and they know each other. Mm-hmm, they go back a long way. Very happy to see each other. We hug.
It becomes clear that not only did she take his classes when she was, you know, studying to be this nebulous cross-disciplinary scientist slash doctor that she is.
Yes.
but he was a mentor figure because he is not a psychic, but he was deeply, deeply interested in the emergence and the new possibilities presented by the psychics of her generation.
Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, she talks about how he left such an impact on her by, you know, reading her heart.
Instead of her mind.
And listening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of books up here on this stage.
Yes.
Is every lecture hall in the world of Sequest also that professor's personal office? Because this is two in a row.
He also fucks in here.
Not nearly as often from this one scene. Like, I mean, it's small sample size. I don't know what this looked like, you know, yesterday or 6 hours ago.
He's much better at having a little cabinet that he hides away his sex stuff in.
He doesn't flaunt it like Tobias.
Yeah, Tobias is like, you know what I'm doing here right after this lecture, where this guy's like, this is private.
Yeah.
This is a personal thing.
This is between me and my 20-year-old grad student.
Yes. Oh my god, was Wendy one of them?
That's not the vibe of this conversation.
It's not the vibe of this conversation. It's not.
That's one thing this episode doesn't do.
So they have a little back and forth of like, you know, mm-hmm, do you have any idea of who is doing this? Because
he's reading the news, and also, as a psychic expert, he's been getting questioned.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't have any idea who could be doing this. And she explains how she saw one of the attacks, and it was enormous power, and it was like psychic power, but, like, no one has that level of power.
And the professor essentially reasons, well, if it couldn't have been done by a psychic, perhaps it wasn't done by a psychic.
I'm like, what do you mean? Tell me more!
What if everything you're saying is right, and Wendy is confused?
They eventually get to, in this conversation of, like, deducing what could have been happening, and it's like, well, you know, for what we're feeling and what it seems like only one part of his psychic abilities is being amplified, and you know, there's none of the empathy there, there's none of this other stuff, so what if he's not all there?
Yeah, yeah.
What if only, like, it's his image and part of his psychic ability that's being amplified, but, like, the rest is not, because he's not feeling the terror.
The telekinetic power, yes, but not the connection between minds.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, maybe. And she's like, you were researching something years ago, sir.
And what his life's work, or one of his great unrealized hopes, at least, was, is a way to boost the psychic abilities of non-psychics, so all the rest of us could get a taste of what it's like, and therefore have greater understanding and empathy with this new type of humanity emerging. Yes. as we explore the unknown.
What if we could all be X-Men?
What and if thus, we were all X-Men?
We don't fear the X-Men, because we are one. Family. Family. We are what?
I love you.
I love you too. Lion King 2 is great. Just gonna say, it has great music. It's a banger.
But that never succeeded. The most he was able to do is make a little headband that makes people who are already psychic more powerful. And that's not it.
He's like,
that's not the goal.
That does the exact opposite of what I wanted, and people will just be more afraid. So obviously I destroyed it. And she's like, obviously you didn't.
It's like, okay, here it is in my briefcase.
I literally have it right here on this desk. It's under this piece of paper. I just gently, like, shoved above it. It's not like you can see it at all.
There was a very conspicuous shot of me putting it in the briefcase as you were walking down the aisleway to come talk to me.
And at this moment, the Avatar appears.
Oh my god, it's him! Ah! And because he is flying in the air, finally, the camera is showing us these wonderful chandeliers.
The chandeliers are great.
In this hall. I love them.
I look like I should be eating some roast chicken as someone spars.
Yeah. It's a black wrought iron. It is that look. But it's good. It's good.
They're very nice. They are very nice. And so the Avatar and Wendy have a little bit of a stare down for a while.
They have a stare down. They have a shout off. Well, not well. Only the Avatar is shouty. Yeah, they yeah. present their cases to one another, mm-hmm. I guess.
And then the professor dude is like, yeah, you know that device that I totally destroyed and do not have here? Here, Wendy, put this on your head right now.
He walks up behind her and lays it on like she's just been named Miss America.
And it glows.
And it glows red. That's how you know it works.
It flashes as though you're at, like, a Taylor Swift concert.
It's glow-with-show magic here in Orlando.
You can't have something glow in Florida without it flashing.
Or South Carolina.
This is true. Especially if it's been taken over by Florida.
Sure, sure.
And so the Avatar, though, is suddenly like, come with me. Come join with me. Merge mm-hmm. with me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Again, his catchphrase has been, join me in hell. He said it to McGath, too.
Yes. Though now it's about merging and being one.
Mm-hmm. As a psychic, as a peer, I suppose, she's getting a different offer than these UEO
yes.
people.
Yes.
Whereas she wants to just meet him face to face in person. I don't want to speak to your projection. I want to speak to you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
This does not go over well.
No.
And when he is about to shoot her with another of his brain blasts, she raises her brain shield.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have leveled up in the psychic abilities with the help of a crown.
So, Dr. Smith can do Hadoukens now.
And so she's holding out her shield, and he's not happy about this. And of course he's like, well, you'll see, like, mankind turned against us, and you turn against mankind too. You're gonna see. You're gonna know what I'm talking about.
X-Men is happening.
So he disappears. Wendy runs out of the lecture hall. A cop car appears. She runs a different way, and I'm just like, take off your glowing crown. They can find you really well in the dark right now.
But she does get found. She gets grabbed by who? By the boys!
And Henderson.
Oh, she's one of the boys. When it's time for action time, she's a boys.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we got Miguel, we got Henderson, we got Ford, we got Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
They came to track her down, and they're like, come on, we gotta get you out of here. And she's like, no, I gotta go to the Avatar, and I can't protect you from the Avatar, and I gotta go alone. And they're like, no, you gotta go with us. And she's like, no.
They are arguing for, you know, teamwork and togetherness and the resources of Sequest, the coolest ship ever built. But she, no, it is too dangerous. This is for psychics only. I have the brain crown. You don't. Leave this to me.
So she puts up a big shield.
Yeah, she gets them with the brain shield.
Yeah, and it, like, Ford was in the way of it, so he gets, like, zapped to the ground for a second. Mm-hmm. And she runs away to
steal another boat.
Yes, through it looks like just garage doors, but it has launch doors on it and yeah. like pads.
Big
and when you
circular,
go in,
yeah,
it goes down into like an actual launch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I love it because from like above ground, it just looks like a garage with a weird door.
Why is this a way that this Florida/South Carolina university just has for transit? Why is this available? Why is this part of their transit network?
So this is like how universities have like rideshare things.
It's a rideshare submarine?
Yeah, yeah.
Where does it go? Do they have an underwater dorm?
Maybe this university is on an island.
Away with a surface boat, unless there is an underwater dormitory.
Maybe there is. To get to the colonies. There's all the different underwater colonies, right?
There are commuting students from from the demon colony, from the plant colony where everyone died.
It is definitely some type of issue to just assume every student comes from Upworld.
Sure, sure. It's even in their like recruitment literature. Up to 14% of our students do commute from various trenches on the seafloor.
Yes, so we have a borrow system for launches that can get you home on the weekends to go visit your family in the case of an emergency in the trench.
Which is always happening, quite frankly. Always happening.
Those are always so busy. That's why they're so upset that the launch is gone. They're like, we need that. There's like a magma flow happening out there at Trench whatever. And like, Susie needs to go rescue her family before they die.
Because the sequest ain't doing it. They're busy.
They're busy. They can't deal with trenches anymore. We have to deal with land. If this was season one, this university would totally be in an undersea colony.
Yes! Where it belongs! So that is the end of that act. As we come back from a commercial, the Sequest crew that failed to collect the birthday girl is in their own brand new shuttle that they got from the UEO base.
It looks so cool.
This is a new design. It's very, like, hydrodynamic, I guess, is the more proper term.
Yeah.
Very, very smooth, very sleek. It looks kind of like a Pepsi bottle, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Pepsi bottle that's gotten stepped on a little bit.
A little bit.
It's skin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're like, we found her. She ran. The Sequest is like, that's okay. We can find her on our sensors. And so Bridger starts a vid call with Wendy, trying to get her to turn around.
But again, it's the same issue. Like, no, this is a psychic job for psychics. I can't risk your safety. I have to go alone. Blah, 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 blah.
Lucas has figured out the direction she is heading, and that is to a welfare colony.
Yes, the Aleph colony. A welfare colony that is operated by a for-profit body, but on UEO funds, it seems. Like yes. they're the private contractor running this public good.
This chronic care patient facility.
Yes, and those who are chronically ill but able to work are employed as carers for the chronically ill that are not able to do tasks. This sounds awful. This is hell. Mm-hmm. They've invented underwater hell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to get health care, you must work.
You must
for us.
Be sick enough to be sent to the bottom of the ocean, and then your job is to like sweep and clean bedpans for the comatose.
Otherwise, we're not going to cover your medical care. Your insurance will be denied.
You know what, Professor Kirby? You know?
What the fuck?
If you had mentioned the Aleph colony, Professor Kirby, I would have given you a little more grace.
Yeah. So Bridger gets on a call with the UEO Colonel dude.
Yes, Colonel Mannheim. Again, another name that was used very recently.
I believe he is the one that was putting in the warrant for Wendy's arrest. I think it's the same dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, well, so when the Avatar took out General Reed, he apparently read his mind, and now all the reactors are going into meltdown. Things are bad.
Things are very, very
things
bad.
Things are bad. And Bridger's like, okay, here's what you're fucking gonna do. You're gonna stop rounding up the psychics and ask them very nicely, with a please, to shield the reactors with their psychic abilities.
Yes, just send all the psychics to the nuclear power plants to, like, hold hands and chant so that the world doesn't explode.
And the dude's
X-Men
like...
X-Men is happening so hard right now.
Why would they agree to help us now? And I'm over here a little bit like, well, maybe because they don't want to die. Because if the reactors go off, everyone's going to fucking die.
But Bridger's response is, well, in my experience, the psychics have a greater capacity for humanity than some of the humans I know. Ah? So Colonel Mannheim here is played by Mark McCauley, who was in the Swedish-produced soap opera Ocean Avenue. Set in America, American cast for Swedish television.
Okay.
He also had a recurring role on Swamp Thing and minor roles in a wide, wide spread of things. I just wrote down some of the ones that you would be excited to hear about, okay. Including Edward Scissorhands, Contact, Cop and a Half, The Truman Show, Too Fast, Too Furious, From Justin to Kelly, Transporter 2, Marley and Me, and Killer Joe. This guy is in all of those movies and many, many more.
What? Jesus! so many.
When in Killer Joe, when Emil Hirsch owes a lot of money to a guy, he's the guy.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Killer Joe's great.
It's not fun.
It's not fun.
No.
It's not like feel good or anything like that. But it's great.
Two pieces of advice to everyone out there. Number one, watch William Friedkin's film adaptation of Killer Joe. Number two, watch the unrated cut, not the R-rated cut. It's not nearly as good.
Don't watch it with people you're not comfortable with.
Or while eating. I'll say that.
Uh-huh. I don't think it's never come up on this show. But so we went to see Killer Joe in the theater.
Yes, yes.
When it was over,
mm-hmm.
and the lights came on and everyone was standing up to leave, I have never heard such a universal groan take place through a theater of people wondering, how do I go on with my day? Because there is a type of trauma you get from watching Killer Joe that you don't come back from. But it's great. You should go watch it.
It's also so funny.
So much.
When Thomas Hayden Church, that's the name of the actor, right?
Probably.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the name of an actor.
when they pull the string, the loose string on his sleeve and the whole sleeve comes off.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Oh, man. Anyhow,
so those are the stakes. We're risking a global nuclear meltdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Bridger radios Wendy again and is like, hey, the Avatar's trying to kill the world. And she's like, well, that doesn't change what I have to do. I'm still going.
Yeah.
And he's like, fine, but we're following you. And she's like, fine, but I'm almost there. So, like, whatever.
Why does this colony have to be underwater?
Why does this colony need to be armed with automatic torpedoes? Because they are targeted with automatic torpedoes that are going to blow them the shit up, and they are unmanned.
Look, this hospital takes HIPAA very seriously.
No one's going to get any information.
You better shut your mouth.
So they have to do countermeasures to try to not get Wendy to be blown up.
Because, again, she's basically driving a school bus submarine.
Yeah, and she's not good at it. No. It kind of is. We're like, Ford and them have this very, like, efficient, no-drag vehicle. Yeah. She is driving...
She's driving a brick.
It's a brick. It is very square. It is very wide.
It has no ability to deal with oncoming fire. But yeah, there's nothing about this episode of the submarine show that has anything to do with the ocean or needed to be in the ocean.
No.
This could have been an episode of Viper.
Yes.
Very, very little changes. It would have made more sense as an episode of Viper.
Yeah.
So we do that action scene.
I just had the worst.
Yeah.
My brain, I'm like, they wouldn't make a show about a car, like a specific type of car again like that. And I was like, God damn it. Someone's going to do it about a fucking Cybertruck. And that's
That'll be the Knight Rider reboot. It's a Cybertruck.
Like, God fucking damn it. It's fucking bullshit.
But yes, we do that action scene. People are looking very, very intently at screens and reading off countdowns. Dagwood is O'Neill's station buddy today.
Yes.
So that's nice.
So yeah, so they successfully do countermeasures. Torpedoes take out other torpedoes. Everyone's good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ford takes a reading of the colony and is like, hey, Wendy, there's a really big concentration of energy at the top, so we should go to that docking bay. And you know what? He was fucking right. The docking bay literally opens to where they want to be.
Yes, yes. And where they want to be. And so they all get there at the same time, basically.
Yes.
It opened up the door, and what are you struck with? They got naked ladies in this.
And dudes.
But they got a lot of naked... this is not a 50-50 ratio.
We have dozens of people on clear glass tables that are hanging from the ceiling in multiple levels.
In a total black void.
Black void in metallic diapers.
Yeah.
With hands covering nipples.
Like and lots of tubes. The Dracula pose, but you're naked, so you're yes. covering your unmentionables.
Yes.
Yes.
And lots of tubes.
Lots of, they are all arranged vertically, hanging in a void, like a abstract stage set design.
Yes.
This
would be used for some pretentious production of something.
This visual is my favorite thing in this episode.
Yeah.
Like, the way this space looks and is arranged. Does it make sense? None.
It makes zero fucking sense.
Zero sense, but it looks cool.
This makes as much sense as dropping those piñatas from the ceiling. Okay. You know what they had? They had for this episode, someone had paid for a forklift that they ended up not needing, and they're like, we're going to use this forklift. Someone's going to get up on the ceiling and attach a lot of things to the ceiling, and we are making use of this. So you rented it, we're using it.
So does
this make any sense for medical care? No, but we're going to do it.
So we spend a lot of time following our cast of five, right? Wendy and the four people sent to arrest her that have been giving chase sense.
They weren't trying to arrest her. I think they were trying to bring her home to help her.
But the five of them wandering around this space, which means a whole lot of time with, like, POV shots of them leering at the nude women for, like, the broadcast yes. network primetime slot safe nude women.
Yes.
A lot more than you'd think.
There's a lot of dudes in the far away shots, but the close-up shots are only of women.
Yes.
And so they all have their moment looking at and being freaked out about what they are seeing. And then Wendy calls them over because at the back of the room, in very bright lighting,
yes.
is a medical table.
An actual table on the floor, and this person is arranged in crucifixion pose instead.
Yes.
So you know he's special when you know it. It's the Avatar.
It's the Avatar, dude. His name is Charles Ross.
His name is just Chuck. He's just Chuck.
They
remember that time they crucified Mulder on a table like this?
Yes.
Yeah.
This was a really big thing in the 90s.
Yeah.
Was to
I think that was after this. This was a couple more than two seasons into the X-Files. Yeah. So yeah.
But
yeah.
It was a big thing back then.
Sure.
And like the dramatic lighting.
Duchovny either wrote or directed that one, as I recall.
Was he a fan of Sequest?
I think he was just a fan of making Mulder into a Christ figure.
Okay, maybe that. And so, like all the other patients here, everyone's in a coma. But this guy's, like, digital screen.
Sure.
They quickly find out that he was injured in a car accident and worked for the UEO.
Oh.
Which means he knew all of the people that he put into comas. And then they're like, oh my gosh, this is why he said, join me in hell. And didn't actually kill them, is because he's in hell, stuck in this coma in this place.
This is hell, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're thinking, oh, wow, what an idea. The chaos is being wreaked on the world of the living by this person in a coma who's reaching out through some technical / psychic system that they don't even understand. Wow. Can I interest you in the episode Brain Scratch of Cowboy Bebop that came out about 4 years later? Takes half as long to watch. It's a million times better. That's actually good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what they, though, quickly deduce is that he is dreaming. He probably doesn't know what he's even doing.
Mm-hmm.
But what is also happening is that he's growing alternative neurological paths. And it seems like the people who worked at this facility knew this. And instead of helping him, they have been experimenting on him to see how he's doing this.
But we can't cut to a commercial with just an informational reveal. We need danger. So suddenly a psychic wave makes the bridge of Sequest start exploding into sparks.
Yes.
All of the consoles are going pew, pew,
pew, pew, pew. And Dagwood has to jump in front of the sparks to save the captain.
Uh-huh.
For some reason. Like, we don't circle back on that at all. So yeah, the Sequest is getting slammed by an energy field. The reason this happens is the Avatar suddenly appears.
Yes.
Pops out of the body, and...
So he's in two places at once inside this room.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is freaking out that they are going to torture him as well, and he's not going to let that happen, and so he shoots energy at Wendy, and she blocks it
with
her brain crown, and then... What they don't know is the energy is pulsing out of the building, hitting the Sequest.
They're doing a little bit of a Dragon Ball at each other.
Yep.
They're firing their Gallic guns and whatnot.
I have learned so much about Dragon Ball this week.
Yeah. Elena never knew that Goku was both a tiny child and a father at different points in the series.
I knew he was a tiny child. I did not know that he ever became a father.
In your mind, Goku is perpetually 16 years old.
Yes.
Because in your mind, Goku is Justin Chatwin, human man.
But all the, like, cartoon images I've seen of him is also like, that's a teenager.
He ages very gracefully.
You also told me he's like a monkey.
Yeah, he got a tail.
I didn't know he had a tail.
He doesn't keep it for very long. They cut it off because he turns into a big giant, like, King Kong monkey.
Like, when the moon is out.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Mind blown. Mind blown, let me tell you.
For reference, she has not seen the second half of Dragon Ball Evolution.
No, I have not.
Where some of these things are used in not lore accurate ways, but still used.
I also have only seen the first half once, and it was years ago. I have less knowledge of Dragon Ball than I do Pokemon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just know that, like Sequest, your favorite one is Piccolo. You can tell that to people, and they'll be like, hell yeah.
There's a Piccolo?
There's a Piccolo in Dragon Ball? Yes, that's how we got in this conversation a few days ago.
Yes, because you said Piccolo in something, and I didn't know what you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I was very confused.
Yeah, he's a green man.
Yeah.
He's very cool.
Yes.
Giant shoulder pads.
Oh, well, of course. Can't not have giant shoulder pads.
It offsets his cape.
The Avatar dude is, of course, like, you think you can stop me? And Wendy's like, fine, I'll join you, since you don't think I can stop you. And he's like, wait, what?
you're gonna do the thing that I asked for over and over again? Okay.
And so her energy, like, zaps out of her body into his body, and she just drops to the fucking floor.
And unlike the Avatar, my good friend Chuck, hers is not, you know, her in like a ghostly glowing form. It's just this ball, her sort of ghost blob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the energy.
It's just And she finds herself inside the haunted house level for Mario 64.
Yeah.
The big piano is going to eat her.
Yes. We got lots of weird camera angles, spinny camera angles.
Big chessboard, a tile floor. A balcony that looks over on a howling mass of the void.
Yes. Charles here appears from behind a doorway and is just, you know, very confused. You know, how are you here? Who are you? What's going on? Type thing. And so she explains
that she is here in his dream to stop him from causing inadvertent harm in reality, but he has it exactly backwards. He believes this haunted house set is the reality he woke up in after that car accident, and the dream where he enacts his revenge on his torturers is just a dream, just an outlet for these thoughts.
Yes.
But oh no, it's backwards.
It's backwards. Yeah, so she's like, hey, you need to stop. You need to get out of here. Like, this isn't real. Let me help you. And he's like, no. And meanwhile, Sequest is not doing great. It's kind of fucked up. Nothing's working. Everything's bad. They're going to sink. Also, all the boys are crowded around Wendy. Ford's just yelling for someone to do something.
Because she collapsed. She's in a coma. Like, bad things are happening with her physiologically. And so it falls to Henderson, because a doctor is kind of like a person mechanic. And she's their best shot.
Yes. And she's like, I don't know what's wrong with her, but I do know she's dying. It's bad. And then at that point, like, the little automated, like, vital machine is like, vitals below optimum levels.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Very helpful.
I'm just like, okay, well, if this is gonna tell you what's wrong, then, like, you don't need Henderson to read this shit out.
Can you walk me through some steps I can take to troubleshoot, like, a copy machine can do, at least?
Open tray 4. Close tray 4. Open tray 4 again and clear the paper jam. I did! Do it again! There's no paper jam! Do it again! Like, what the fuck?
It says Dr. Smith is low on cyan toner.
Find, like, one tiny little, like, 3 millimeter piece of paper that it still thinks caught in there.
So yeah, they're in the dreamscape throwing brain blasts at each other, arguing over what's real and what's not, and who has a responsibility to what.
Yep.
This is the part of the episode, really, from when they find him to the end. That I completely check out of the episode, and my notes are very spotty.
It just goes back and forth with the same shit for so long. And eventually, they're on a balcony that she's almost falling off into the void, and
It's kind of Beetlejuicy on the balcony.
It's so Beetlejuicy.
Right.
It's so Beetlejuicy.
When they try to leave the house, and there's the sand. And, yeah, that part,
It's very Beetlejuicy, but, like, swirling vortex of death.
Yeah. There should be one of them stripey worms with a mouth inside its mouth.
There should be. That'd be amazing. And it can have lava coming out of its nose.
We have the technology.
Yes.
We've done it before.
And she's all like, you're just afraid. And he's like, no. And she's like, fear grows in loneliness and no one has been more alone than you.
Mm-hmm,
and I'm like, not to compare pain, but maybe the people who are in comas and can't, like, I don't know, astro project into the real world are maybe more lonely. I don't know.
They haven't been continually tortured by the staff here.
True.
Like, it's not good. He's not in a good position.
I'm not saying there's, like, a win-win. I'm just like, I don't know if you can say he's top loneliness. Like, I feel like there's
he could have been projecting
loneliness.
Out to, like, go get ice cream or something.
Mutual loneliness.
Yeah, sure.
Many people are lonely here.
Again, if we change the episode order, so we learn that the UEO, up to the highest levels, up to General McGath, are torturing coma patients in order to do experiments on what psychics are capable of. And then there's someone saying, hey, the UEO are just generically evil, and I don't have to explain any more than that. I might have bought that kidnap episode a little more. But anyhow, their conversation comes to a head. Again, it is time for Brain Blast versus Mind Shield.
Yes.
And what this means is, if you, like, remove the effects laid onto it, it's just these two actors standing in front of a green screen, waving their hands at each other for, like, a few minutes.
Yes. And it's really bad. It reminds me of, like, they were told to do it, but not really given an example of what it was going to look like.
Yes.
And it reminds me of, like, all the clips of where they take out the special effects and you see the, like,
For like, the Disney Channel wand ident.
Yes, and then you actually track draw. It. Yeah, it reminds me of that, where they're just like, ew!
Like, there are bits in this episode where director, executive producer David J. Burke is going for dramatic angles, going for framing that follows, framing that tries to make these actions more engaging. This one, they are just, like, flat mid-shot profile. It's so boring. Mm-hmm. It's so bad.
Mm-hmm. And she eventually, when he's like, you know, because he's, like, going off of how he's gonna, like, kill her if she keeps trying to, like, do this, and she's like, no, you won't, you've never killed before, even in your dreams. So she puts her shield down.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, you know, do what you want. When you beg me to join me, you said it was because I have gentle eyes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And
so look into my gentle eyes. Look into the... I hate the way she talks.
So
everything is this whisper of gentle and look at... Like, ugh! I hate it!
So like I said with the mid-stretch of season two, you can make the episode as silly as you want, but if the drama is good, I'm there for it, right? Mm-hmm. Big alligator, very strange, but the Ford family trio and how they work together, that's the good stuff. I like that episode even so.
Yeah.
And, like, you're going for, like, to be psychic is to have these connections, but to deal with other people's fear, you have to put up walls, and what if we bring down our walls, and then we can truly relate to one another and build on the promise of our emergence. But it sucks. It sucks, and it's bad, and it's boring, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Like, you had an idea, but you delivered none of it. It's just dumb.
And somehow, again, this mm-hmm. is the least annoyed I've been with her at an episode, but it's just because I think it's boring.
And so, like, she does get through to him. He doesn't want to hurt people. This is all, you know, he doesn't want to blow up the world. It's all an accident, right?
So she goes to guide him to the light.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And he has to carry her because
she's dying.
Because she's dying. And I think that the quote is something like, you have to build the path yourself.
Which is literally, right. You have to build mind stairs.
You have to build brain stairs.
Build your brain stairs.
We're going to literalize the metaphor.
And the light's not going to kill you. It's going to keep you alive.
Good intentions don't make good TV. You have to build the path yourself. Okay, yes. Very inspiring. This still sucks, though. It's not fun to watch.
So he carries her out. And as they're doing chest compressions, she starts breathing again. Mm-hmm, he comes back to his body, shoots up out of the coma crucifixion bed and yells to take it off of her, which is the headgear.
Yeah.
Rushes to her side as she wakes up.
Mm-hmm.
And as the Sequest computers reboot because they've stopped getting energy pulses.
Yes. Mannheim comes on the phone and he's like, I don't know what you did, Bridger, but the reactors aren't going critical anymore. Oh boy, what happened out there?
I don't know, but you're going to owe Dr. Smith a big apology.
And he's taking this call not on the big screen, where calls always are. This is the first episode where he's been taking calls on the little screen on the tablet arm of his captain's chair.
Yes.
And I get that the idea means that Bridger is looming, looking over this tiny man to emphasize his power in the scene here, but nothing makes someone actually look less tough than trying to flex over a little picture in their phone. It looks so petty. It's so dumb.
Yeah. Back on the Sequest, everyone's mm-hmm. there, and I mm-hmm. guess it's like, I don't know, next day or something.
Including Chuck.
Lucas, of course, has him in the moon pool with Darwin, like yes. we do to all our visitors. If we don't have a jumpsuit to give them, they get to swim with the dolphin.
Dolphin time heals the mind and soul.
Yeah.
There we go. There's our one line back to original Sequest.
And Bridger comes in and is like, hey, Wendy, how's our patient doing? And she's like, well, he lost his powers and he doesn't remember anything that happened, but he's fine. And Bridger's like, that's good. Well, you know, when it comes to those internment camps, the UEO apologized and is paying everyone money because they fucked up.
Like, they couldn't even have been filled, right? Like, it was a day? It was a long day. There are people still on the bus, excuse me, the submarine, because I'm sure this camp is underwater somewhere.
Maybe they're just paying everyone that they made work at the reactors.
They should pay them too. I agree, everyone should get restitution, but like,
they should get extra.
Yeah.
Because they were in danger.
They should dismantle the camps. They should dismantle the ability of the UEO to create these camps. But, like, the camps didn't actually happen if you follow any sort of practical timeline.
It was like 3 hours.
Yeah.
Which does make me, like, how fast did they get everyone?
That's what you should be afraid of. What capability does the UEO have to send, like, a SWAT team to the home of every single psychic on Earth just like that at a moment?
Yeah.
I'm signing up with Dr. Kirby. Fuck these guys. Fuck them.
Yeah, seriously.
I don't know what your, like, specific inclination is, but I'll find out later. You know, that's
right?
That's step two.
So then they're like, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to blow up the colony for the comatose.
I hope they evacuated first.
I hope they did that. And I hope they're doing more to this, like, for-profit healthcare place than just blowing up one of their facilities. Like, are we, like, looking at them? Is there, like, an in-depth investigation happening into their practices?
Is Secretary General McGath their number one shareholder? Is that his involvement in this situation?
You know, this might explain a lot. So then, though, they Bridger and Wendy wander over to Lucas and Charles, and Lucas is like, hey, Darwin wants to show you a trick. And it is Darwin blowing through his hole.
His blowhole.
His blowhole into one of the party things.
Yeah, the little... Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's the cue for everyone to jump out and yell, surprise, and pinatas to drop again from the ceiling and the poster.
And there's a second cake.
And they're redoing the birthday party because she got brain zapped the last time.
And we end just as we began. We finally get to finish. Happy birthday, Wendy. That's the end of the episode.
That's the end of the episode.
The end of the narrative, at least, because over the credits, we have Edward Kerr. He is at SeaWorld Orlando and wants to terrify you, the viewer, about the barracuda.
I fucking hate barracudas. They are terrifying.
Which is something you would know from listening to this fish fact. They grow up to 6 feet long. They swim up to 28 miles per hour. They have dozens and dozens of teeth. They are known as the tigers of the sea. But they don't want to eat people. They just sometimes do.
From my time on a sailing trip as a teen in the Gulf of Mexico, we were not worried about the sharks. The sharks were always fine. The sharks were doing shark things. They didn't care. The fucking barracudas. They're absolutely terrifying. They go from 0 to 60.
Well, they go from 0 to 28.
Whatever. They randomly just appear. And they do look like they will shred you to death. Fucking terrifying.
So, darling, have you got a fish fact?
I do. I decided, Brody talked about what I find to be the most terrifying fish.
Okay.
That the least terrifying fish
okay.
would probably be the smallest fish.
Didn't we already talk about the smallest fish?
Did we talk about the smallest
fish? Tell me about the smallest fish.
I don't feel like I talked about this. Did I? Maybe I did. If I did, I apologize. So the smallest fish is the Indonesian super dwarf fish.
Oh my goodness. It sounds so small.
It is found in peat swamps and slow-flowing backwater streams, and it was only discovered in 2006.
Oh, this is a brand new fish. Fish drop.
Females only reach a maximum standard length of 10.3 millimeters.
That's a centimeter.
And the males reach a maximum of 9.8.
Oh, big ladies.
For a while, the smallest known mature specimen was a female measuring only 7.9 millimeters.
Oh, how you doing, little lady?
Now, it did hold the record of the shortest known vertebrae until a New Guinea frog was found in 2012. Which was 7.7.
That's a tiny frog.
But that has also lost the record because of a male type of anglerfish that is only 6.2.
So that's the tiniest fish.
Because
of the anglerfish's sexual dimorphism.
Yes.
I guess if you average the two sexes.
Yes, it doesn't. Okay, yeah. Okay. That, so it doesn't hold smallest fish, but it does hold shortest known vertebrae.
Sure.
So there you go. I don't think I shared this one before.
That's correct. That was our new fish.
Yeah.
I also took inspiration for my fish fact from Edward Kerr's.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk about him himself.
Oh!
You will notice in this entire episode of Whiskers, We Share Knowledge Regarding SeaQuest, we did not mention Lieutenant James Brody once.
No, he's not in this
episode. He does not appear in this episode.
He should be instead of Henderson, but he's not.
He is not present because Ed Kerr read the script and refused to be in it. This episode, and perhaps a few like it, led him to believe being associated with the television program Sequest DSV would be detrimental to his future career.
Okay. So,
and so he began agitating to be released from the show.
Yeah.
More on that as the story develops.
Yes.
That's my fish fact for this episode.
There you go.
Brody's not here because he thought it was garbage.
Yeah, it kind of is. This is definitely one of those skip episodes for me.
This one's a skip? Okay.
Yeah, I don't rewatch. There's like no Lucas either. So like,
there's very little Lucas.
Yeah.
He just sort of tags along in some of the expository meetings.
Yeah.
He gets to check out a topless babe.
Yeah. Episode, if it's not worth it for me. It's also Wendy focused. I just.
You hate her so much.
I hate her so much. I think she's awful. And you can't just, and here's the thing, is you can't just be like, oh, you don't like her because she replaced Wes Phelan. Part of it's yes, but you know what? There's going to be a new doctor in season 3, and she's fine. Quite honestly, they could have done more with her. Just going to say.
Yeah, as I recall, and we'll get there when we get there, but I think she's just a doctor. She's not really in the action like the previous doctors.
Just a doctor, and I would have actually very much enjoyed her having a real, like, thought-out role.
Yeah. She's a character in the way that every once in a while there will be, like, someone on the bridge crew that gets, like, lines in 2 or 3 episodes. Like, are they a person that mm-hmm. I'm supposed to care about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, a little bit more.
But
a few degrees more than that.
Halfway between that guy who did Weapons at the end of season 1. Not Shan, but, you know, that guy with the glasses, so I can't remember his name.
Yeah. Sounds like an O, I think.
And, I guess, for example, Shan.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the realm between those two kinds of guys, where I think I recall this doctor lying.
It would have been, I think, like, if they could have given her, like, one episode, it was one of those things where it's like background characters, like give them one episode a season where they actually are like in a story. Like how I wanted Linus in Star Trek Discovery to have a fucking plot.
Well, no, he had allergies. He's too sneezy to have a plot.
Just wanted it once.
But anyhow, that's all we have to talk about this time. Next time,
mm-hmm.
Which is probably not next week, but next time.
Yes. We're going to be, as a reminder, a little sporadic in episodes, probably having a bit of a break, just due to life.
Mm-hmm. A lot of prior engagements.
Yes.
Personal, professional.
Yes.
Yeah. For the both of us, even.
Yes.
But when we get to it, and again, the best place to know when to expect a new episode or when to not expect a new episode is to follow us on Blue Sky at whiskers.biscuit.social.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes, it will be a very special episode. The only Sequest with musical numbers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So look forward to that when it comes.
In the meantime, if you've enjoyed listening to us, you can leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to us. And if it's 5 stars, we might read it.
I would absolutely love to see more 5-star reviews in Apple Podcasts because I want to read them. It's my favorite part of the episode.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can also go tell your friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great time for them to find out about us, do a little catch up. Come join the party.
Because what? You want to be alone?
Do you want to be alone in this?
No one wants to be alone in this.
Really, no one should be alone in this episode. It's oof. You need moral support.
You need someone to help you make the brain shield by sort of waving your arms without proper direction.
Wave the arm. It's like a bar workout. Working the tiny muscles, and then you gotta go the other way.
Yeah.
And if you want, you can add a 5-pound weight.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's the sort of training that the Avatar would have put Wendy through if she had joined him as he requested.
Yes. Yes. They would have done some good sculpting.
Mm-hmm.
Strength building. So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.